and bids them have a care, so that they come safely to their journey's end, and into the presence of their loving friend Mastiat, who has them in her heart. Along with their 50,000 gemia goblins, thinks Cynical Flashy, but when she added, smiling all fondly maternal on Wedeju, "And you, gallant warrior, farewell through all dangers, and know that you take with you the prayers of a grateful and loving queen," I wasn't a bit surprised to see him drop to his knees and press her hand to his forehead and lips, while infantry and cavalry fell over each other to join him. Ahmed almost shed a tear of filial devotion, and even grizzled old Fazl looked moist and noble. If she'd been a beauty in the mould of Yeonala or Lakshmibe, or even as handsome as Ulaba Walk, their adoration, for that's what it was, no error, would have been in order. But she was a hearty piece of middle-aged Eve's flesh of no remarkable allure. That she appealed to me was, by the way, I'm a connoisseur of feminine beauty, but no discrimination worth a damn. And anyway, I'm perversely partial to royal rattle. And yet, she had that quality which I can't describe, but which attracts where mere perfection of form and feature are no more exciting than a marble statue. I guess it's charm, and she spread it over her soldiers like Circe's spell. I suppose she charmed me, and I don't mean only Randy-like, but happy captivation. Aye, that must have been it, for I find myself smiling still whenever I think back on her, while Ulaba has faded into the shadows. I came away from that audience a relieved and thankful man, glad to have a moment at last for rest and reflection. Things could hardly have come out better, however hellish they have been since I'd left Napier's camp weeks ago. My worst fears had been realised along the way. The skirmish with Yando's gang, that appalling dangle in the steel cage, the palpitating escape from the Sudani bandits at Gondar, the clash with Theodore's riders, my plunge over Abyssinia's Niagara, the shock of Uluba's reappearance and most uncalled-for assault. But here I was again. None the worse, bar a bruise or two, duty done in securing the Gala Alliance and dispatching the glad news to Napier, and no great anxieties ahead that I could see. True, I'd have to arrange matters so that I could appear to be commanding the Gala operations while keeping clear of the action, but that ain't difficult when you've had years of practice. I'm a prime hand at playing Lionheart without doing a blessed thing, what dear old Tom Hughes called shouts and great action, and I could occupy myself splendidly at Gala HQ, keeping the threads of administration together, don't you know, taking an overall view, until I deemed it safe to join the last rally. Meanwhile, I could think of worse billets than the court of good Queen Mastiat. Safe, well-stocked and furnished, friendly. Of course, it went without saying that I'd have to do my extra diplomatic duty by Her Majesty, but that would be no hardship. And if you wonder how I was so sure of her, I can only say that I had felt her mouth under mine and read the message in her lazy smile. Besides, in Ab society, which, as I've told you, is probably the most immoral on earth, Cheltenham ain't in it, rogering the hostess is almost obligatory, part of the etiquette, like leaving cards, and not at all out of the way in a country where it's considered a mortal insult to praise a woman's chastity, since it implies that she's not attractive enough to be galloped. Say no more. But while I knew it would be only a matter of time before Mastiat and I had our wicked way with each other, I could never have foreseen the circumstances. Indeed, had I been forewarned, I'd not have believed it. I'm neither inexperienced nor a prude. I have known, and been party to, abandoned behaviour, and have even joined in the occasional orgy. But I can take oath that I have never known the like of the reception and feast that the old Chamberlain had described as an entertainment. It was he who led me, all unsuspecting, to the dining chamber of the royal residence, in which the other guests, about a dozen, were already assembled. The long, low dining table was surrounded by cushioned stools set in pairs, one for each couple, and at the head was a spread of cushions for the Queen, who had not yet arrived, and her guest of honour. Fazl, cavalry and infantry were on hand, each with a beauty in tow, the two lads being accompanied by a pair of Mastiat's handmaidens, and Fazl by a quite breathtaking creature of about his own age, who may well have been his wife. She had those delicately perfect features you see on some Scandinavian women, and was jet black.